Do you ever wish that your room smelled of moonlit glade, a wizard's library, or a dragon's hoard? Well, Firelight Fables Candle Company, it can. These handcrafted, fantasy-inspired candles don't just smell amazing, but they tell a story. Whether you're prepping for game night or curling up with your favorite book, Firelight Fables brings the realm of imagination to your senses. Light the wick and enter the world. Explore their collection at firelightfables.com and use code STORYCRAFTERS for 15% off your order. Again, that's firelightfables.com, and welcome to the StoryCrafters.
Everybody, hey, hi, how's it going? What's up? We are the Story Crafters. My name is Jeff. We have Jared, Nicole, and Charlie with us as usual. How the heck are you guys? Tell me all about your lives. What have you been up to? Hello.
I feel like it's been too long.
It feels like it's been forever.
Yeah, man. Been a couple weeks.
Life is crazy like that sometimes.
But hey, like, I got my liquid death. I'm ready for tonight.
I have my liquid courage.
Hey.
It's coffee.
Cheers.
It's coffee, all right. Now we're coming up almost on 2 years sober for me, actually.
Hey.
Anyways, but guys, enough rambling, because I want to actually hear about what you have done lately. Let's roll that initiative, shall we?
Right.
Oh my god.
That was so loud, I apologize.
Rolling my critical roll dice tonight.
Ooh.
Well, the good news is it doesn't matter how long we go between things, I still roll in single digits. So
yeah. Remember that natural one I said I rolled before the show?
Mm-hmm.
It's not much better. All right. Charlie, what'd you get?
Double ones for an 11. That's the only time I like a one.
11.
All right, Nicole? I got
nine.
Six.
Six. I got a two.
Yeah.
Lord.
Oh, man. True right. GM fashion. How do you know a group of GMs are rolling dice?
Charlie, Nicole, Jared, me. Charlie, kick us off, brother. How you been, man? What you been up to?
Busy. Yeah. Absolutely busy. 9 to 5 has grown in demand, and so just been really slammed with that. So unfortunately, no additional games other than my one monthly one, which next session is tomorrow, so I'm very excited for that. After the big climactic session that we had last time when we actually recorded last and spoke about it. So I'm very excited for that to happen tomorrow. I'm also excited. Hopefully we'll see how the timing works. But I think maybe in like 2 recording sessions, maybe 3, I'll have a neat little D&D corner that I will have tricked out in the apartment. So carved out some time in the busy schedule to finally get that project rolling. So I'm very excited for that. But yeah, otherwise I did get to play in my campaign recently and explore this custom subclass a little bit. Got to do a lore drop about it and everybody at the table. It was so cool. I love it when other players are genuinely interested in your character's backstory. And the fact that I could do that paired with this homebrew subclass mechanic was really, really exciting, and it was very validating how everyone at the table was engrossed and interested in asking questions, and it was awesome. So it was a lot of fun.
Nice. That's great. That's awesome. I love that. Nicole, what you been doing?
Well, it's still May, so I'm still plugging away promotions for
yes.
Oh my gosh. That's going to be incredible.
So excited.
Very excited. I think I've got we're fully funded, and we're just kind of like continuing to get in front of more people and get more orders. So that's really fun. Super excited about actually getting some of the extras that we included in the Kickstarter, like the coloring book and the stickers and that, like actually getting it made and having it in hand is going to be super exciting.
Cool. That's awesome.
I actually get to play D&D as a player very soon on the 24th of May. James from Tabletop Misfits is running a one-shot for me and the people who helped me work on the book.
That's awesome.
So we're going to do a one-shot in Etheria, and I'm actually playing one of the characters from the book.
Heck yeah, so fun.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
That should be fun. I think we're going to do it as like a charity live stream benefiting some sort of children's charity. We haven't totally nailed that down yet, but that'll be streamed through Tabletop Misfits on Saturday, the 24th of May. So super excited to get to be a player again. And it's going to be weird, like being a player in my world. I have to kind of like let go a little bit because I didn't have the mental capacity to run it. So when James asked me about it, he was like, well, I really want to do a one shot in Etheria. And I was like, I can't, like, I cannot run it this month. And he was like, no, it's cool. I'll run it. Just tell me about your world and I'll run it. I'm like, all right, cool. That should be really fun.
Awesome.
I can tell you as somebody I've done this. I've been in a one shot that a friend of mine ran as part of in my world. It is super fun and exciting. The best thing I can say is, I'm sure you guys have already planned and everything, but give him just like a little section that's like pretty undeveloped and just let him run wild and just sit back and just enjoy.
I'm super excited about it. I'm excited about what he's going to do with it. And like every time we get together and talk about it, I get more hyped about playing.
Nice. That's awesome.
That's the best part about that is when you know it's going to be good is when you get hyped just thinking about it.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
I love that. Can't wait to watch it. And
Yeah,
if you aren't following Tabletop Misfits, you absolutely have to. So go ahead and go do that now. Pause the video. Go do it right now. Let them know we sent you. Yeah. Nothing in that. Just, I don't know. I've always wanted to say that.
I love it.
Jared, what's up, dude?
Yeah, hey, I've actually gotten to play D&D twice since we last like met, which is I actually got to play once and then ran a game. I should clarify. So the first I was a player in a one shot. My brother ran, and he actually ran Hold Back the Dead, which is the pre written module that I think was buddy on D&D Beyond a while back. A lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Definitely, it works great as a one shot. Definitely would be super cool to like and put into a larger story. It's a really cool setting. So that was a lot of fun. I hadn't been a player, honestly, I don't think this year yet. So that was pretty cool to be able to do that. A lot of fun. It's very much like a tower defense sort of thing. And I made a character that has like had no ranged abilities because I didn't know what it was going into it. Still a great time. I then got to also run a session, I think session like 35, 36 of the Abyssal Tide, my homebrew world. And it was a lot of fun. We hadn't played for like a month, so I felt very, very going in. And it definitely wasn't like my most smoothly run session ever, but beyond that, I've been doing some crafting. Very close to finishing some things that I really desperately need to take pictures and post because I've been dragging my feet doing that. But it's been fun. I've been still very busy with life things, but freer, so I feel like I've been able to do more things, which has been great. So beyond that, I mean, not much is going on. So Jeff, what about you?
Before we go to me, how close are we to finding out more about that mystery game board that you did?
It's a great question. I know that at the end of this month of May, I believe that it has arrived in the UK, which is the biggest relief ever, as I was like losing sleep over it being shipped and you know, all that stuff. At the end of this month, it is being run at a convention in the UK. So I would assume at that point, I will be able to publicly share more information, but I'm kind of still waiting on the green light. So I still have tons and tons of content that I'm planning to share when the time comes. But I've kind of paused the brakes because I don't want to I don't want to spill the beans, you know, too soon.
So I know everyone is dying to know, so I had to, you know, I felt it was my duty to do it.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm excited to share it. So it seems like a distant memory now, you know, because it's been a few weeks, but
it's okay. You'll be reenacted at some point, I'm sure. I haven't gotten to play in past a month now, but because of work. I actually had to cancel last session because I was like, yeah, guys, there's no way I can go to work, run D&D, and be at work with sound check up at 6 a.m. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
It's just not happening, guys. But it being May, there's a fun painter's challenge in May called Many a Day May.
Oh, yeah.
And so me and a few of my buddies that are in the painting hobby, we are just going nuts on models whenever free time you have. So the whole idea that the challenge is to paint completely one model a day, which is a lot. So we're kind of taking it just as like, just be creative every day if you get a chance, even if you're only painting for like 20 minutes or whatever. But my backlog has gotten significantly smaller. Because it's just like, hey, let's just knock out the low-hanging fruit models that have been sitting on my shelf. And I've learned some new techniques to get things going a little quicker, but also still look really good. So hobby painting wise, it's been really successful. Also partly because I wasn't really able to sleep much. So I'd just be up late or in the morning and I was like, oh, I got coffee and a paintbrush. So
there you go.
But we are playing this upcoming week. We are definitely playing, and I'm putting a rather large game like environment type change into the game. I introduced a fallen airship at the end of the last session, which my world was pretty much like Tolkien-esque, where, you know, high fantasy type thing, but an airship that has actual jet propulsion. So I'm trying to like kind of tilt the world into a steampunky vibe. And so this will be the first kind of like opening to like, oh wait, there's, because they're going to this new part of the world, and I was like, oh no, this is where the industry is starting, is from the north, and it's gonna work down. So that's what I did there. But and the players, if they try to, they can actually fix it and use it in game to get to places and stuff. So
dope.
If you're listening,
that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Boom. If you're listening and you're my players, you get yourself an airship. Fix the airship. Yeah, that was it for what I've done. It seems everyone is just tired and busy. So
we have all definitely hit like a hyper busy stretch of life. All like different things, but yeah, it's definitely I think everybody's feeling the like cumulative levels of exhaustion.
Definitely.
I just during my thing, but I want to show off real quick. It was Mother's Day since we last met.
Mother's.
Crooked Hollow sent me this cute shirt. This is like a new design of theirs.
Nice.
Send it, Mom.
Very cool. Crooked Hollow.
They sent it to me as a gift, and I was like, "Oh, it's so nice."
What a classy plug too. Like, Game Master Mom, send her the Dungeon Mom shirt for Mother's Day. I mean, like, they could have just sent it to you in general, right? They could have just like said, hey, are you interested in buying this? No, they were just like, we see an opportunity to do something cool for a mother on Mother's Day who's in D&D.
That's awesome.
Quality people.
They're so cool. Real. They're nice people, and I love their shirts. I think I have four, maybe five of their shirts now.
I don't have any of their shirts. I need to change this.
Yeah, I just saw it today or yesterday. Within the last couple of days, they have the partner to that that says Dungeon Dad. And I was considering just ordering a Dungeon Mom shirt because I'm like, that's a cool design. But now I feel like I need to get the Dungeon Dad one. So
you definitely do.
I'm on it, guys. They have awesome stuff. I'm trying to remember. I have like two of their shirts and I can't for the life of me remember which ones as I'm sitting here. But they're good stuff.
I know you've got the like Dungeon Master, like teaching kids to dungeon crawl.
That's right.
You've got
yeah,
that one.
That's right.
Because we both have that one.
Yep.
That's funny. Jeff, what did you say?
Oh, I was just saying I'm slacking on the nerd merch in general. I just wear black t-shirts and white t-shirts.
Hey,
for works, for works, man.
And tank tops, because it's hot as balls over here.
Like, it is, yes.
Yeah, my AC is struggling to keep up. So, but
like, I've got like 20 years of band tees that I will never
get rid of. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most of those all became... if I wore them now, they'd be crop tops on me. man. Anyways, let's focus up here. Let's get dialed back in because today, guys, is episode 10. It is a super spectacular episode for us. One, thank you guys so much to you guys for doing this. This has been incredible. I really didn't expect this to do as well as it's done with the people we've met, the opportunities that we've had. This was just a fun little, let's do a podcast. And to you guys listening and giving us support and talking to us and all the comments and everything, you guys are so incredibly important to us. You truly do make this just, it makes it worth it. I mean, it's not that hard to do a podcast, but what's hard to do is keep the motivation to want to continue to do a podcast. And we were talking earlier, just like, man, this is fun. Like you get like, I was like, I wanted to ask how these guys are doing, but it's like, that's part of our show. And it's like, oh, right. Yes. And I just get excited to actually talk to you guys. So
yeah,
thank you guys, the viewers, the supporters, the listeners, everything like that. We love you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And this episode is going to be dedicated to you guys, the viewers, the listeners, and we have your comments and questions that we opened up to the floor. And we want to hear from you guys, so we took the opportunity for episode 10 to dedicate it to you guys. So let's just go ahead and dive into these questions. Again, thank you all for commenting. And if you have any other questions or whatever, shoot us a message, talk to us in the comments.
Yeah.
We'll respond back to them. And just because the episode might not have your question in there, doesn't mean we're not going to respond to it and talk to you online anyways. So, boom, I've talked enough. Thank you. Love you. Let's go. All right.
Well, hey, cool if I kick us off here?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So our first question is going to be from Dungeon Matters. Awesome person. If you don't follow Matt on Instagram already, everybody should go follow Dungeon Matters.
Dude,
truly
awesome.
Really beautiful human. Anyway, the question is, how do you guys tie your players together when you start a new campaign?
Who wants to start?
I can kick us off.
Let's go in initiative order for that. Let's go in initiative.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Good call. Okay.
Yeah, so Charlie,
that makes it nice and efficient.
Exactly.
I really try to avoid the tropes just for the sake of tropes, right? And I say that just because especially with my professional D&D games, I do so many of them with a variety of people. I'd never know what they have experienced. So I just always try to do something that is unique to the group, to the players, try to incorporate their backstory, see what makes sense with what kind of characters they're bringing to the table, and where we're starting off as well, and just try to make it unique to that. So I've done things where everybody's been kidnapped and in the jail cell to, everybody is, been answered to a bounty. Shout out, for instance, I was watching Thunderbolts and, that scene, if you've seen Thunderbolts, where they're all like, what? No, I'm here for this and you and him and not you, but this, I was like, I've done that.
Nice. Okay. Nicole, what about you?
I feel like I don't have a super creative answer to this because most of my games kind of start the same way, which is typically, since I'm playing with kids or a mixed group of kids and adults, usually the setting that we start with is that they're students in kind of like a Hogwarts type academy sort of thing. So they naturally all come together because they all go to school together. That's my like go-to, how I tie everybody together. Yeah. And then we just kind of roll it from there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense for kids to tie it to something they know. So they can feel,
I mean, I think there's some beauty in like basics too. It's there for, you know, mm-hmm. you meet in a tavern, it works because it works, you know.
Right. Right. And like, I mean, that's so relatable. Like, how do you make friends as a kid? Like, you just go to school with them. Right. They are.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. Yeah. For me, my campaign that I'm running right now is really the first time I've ever had to do anything with it. This time I did something that I would absolutely do again. I actually had one-on-one sessions with everybody before we started as a group and did like a prelude that kind of took their backstory from where they left it, getting them from that point to where I needed them, which was basically to be a member of a crew on a pirate ship. That was a lot of fun because it gave me as the DM a chance to get to know everybody's character one-on-one, gave them a chance to kind of, you know, try some things and all that. It worked great for me having the individual sessions and then basically bringing them all physically, you know, into one scenario. And then they could all be there for different reasons. Beyond that, with the greater story, I definitely have, you know, threads that intertwine everybody with different, you know, sects of groups and all these things, you know. But I think just out the gate, that was really fun. I would definitely do it again whenever the time comes to run another, you know, long-term story.
Yeah. Yeah. I have done both the you meet in a tavern, blah, blah, blah. And then this past campaign that I'm playing or that I'm DMing right now, I had everybody in session zero. We knew we were going to start in a carnival. So I asked, hey, what job or what do you want to do at the carnival in general? Some people were, they're like, I want to go to it. I was like, all right, cool. So you're just going to go to it. Some were like, I want to work one of the booths. I was like, all right, sweet. What booth do you want to work? I had two people like, we want to be bouncers. I was like, all right, cool. Let's do like, that's awesome. Like, so, I typically in my sessions here is ask how the players want to get to know each other. Cause that puts that stress of like, you know, that awkward session one where you're like, all right, like, how are we getting to know each other actually? So I always ask them in session zero, hey, what do you guys want to do? Cause I could have just as easily had them all have just been people that got to go to the carnival. That's what I do. Or at least that's what I've done this past game. This past campaign. So that's what I'm going to stick with. Dungeon Matters. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Just to super quickly pile on that, I do think as a DM, I find it very important for your players to have some sort of backstory that you can build from in order for any of that to take place.
But. Yeah, it's not necessary, but oh my gosh, can it help so much and really just give you some good stuff to work into in later sessions. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure.
And just to echo what you said, Jared, if you have time as a GM to have individual sessions with your players prior to the first session as a group, absolutely recommend that. That is so much, I definitely prefer that as a GM. It is so much better and then have like a little, you know, session 0.5 for 30 minutes with everybody before you kick off the first session.
Nice. That's a good way to jump into this. Who wants to take the next one?
So let's continue initiative. Jeff, go, you go.
I would be last, technically. Nicole would be...
I went first, so
I... Yeah, I was Jared wins, so you would be next.
All right. I thought we were starting from the top there. All right.
This is why we roll initiative, because we can't decide who goes next.
I'm going to go ahead. Tabletop Misfits asks, what's a technique that you have used to avoid people losing engagement? Okay.
Needs engagement. Snacks.
Snacks is a great.
Come back in with snacks. I think
that's
with
honestly, next question. That's the correct answer.
Tabletop Misfits coming in strong with the tough ones. Okay, Charlie, do you want to go ahead and start us off then with this for this question?
Yeah. So I know, like, one of the things that I like to do, an area that I know players, and I think I've talked about this a little bit before, tend to get disengaged is during combat, you know, when it's especially very turn dependent and you're at higher levels. So one of the things that I like to do is, queue up the players and tell them, you know, so like, cause I've found that if I put like a tracker or something up for everybody to reference, people tend to disengage a little bit more because they're just like, you know, I physically see my place in the line. Mm-hmm. And so I like to just say, you know, okay, you're on deck, you know, after so-and-so go. So they can start kind of prepping and everything. And I like to try to, you know, incorporate and reference as well when one character does something. And this part isn't just for combat, but it works really well with combat. When they do something for their turn, I like to, you know, add a little bit of context and flavor of what's going on. And I like to say, you know, and point to sometimes like a random player and just be like, you know, does your character notice this? Or, you know, what would they be thinking when they see, you know, so-and-so do this? And just kind of, you know, cue them up a little bit. And it also gives them a little bit more feeling of involvement rather than just their turn during combat too.
Nice. Yeah. I love that. Nicole, what you do?
I mean, I'm going to come back to snacks again because I feel like that really is my answer to everything. Integrate the snacks into the gameplay. There's a lot of fun ways you can do that I feel like adults would like too. Like you can use
as an adult, like, M&M's
or Skittles or something like that for like HP for bad guys that you're fighting. And like every time you knock off a point, you get to eat the health point.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that'll keep you motivated.
Yeah, that's so funny.
No, I'm not. Yes, have an M&M. Yeah.
I mean, really though, honestly, I don't know if it's more for my players or for me, but we take a lot of breaks. We have a lot of snacks. We do a lot of like get up and move sorts of things. Like, okay, well, if you're gonna do like some kind of dodge roll or something, I'm like, get up and show me what that actually looks like. Well, let's see you do it, you know? So, I integrate a lot of food and movement and interaction into my games to keep my little ones engaged.
I was going to say, and then what do you do with your kids? So obviously you do that with your other players. What do you do with your kids?
Right. You know what? The same strategy works across the board.
It's just going to be more injuries for the adults because I know with me and my group, if somebody tries to roll across the ground, it's not going to end well.
Yeah. There's just generally a lot more like groaning and like body kind of sounds that happen when the old people do it.
For sure. For me, and it's definitely situational, I found like environmental turns, even if it's out of combat, having some environmental issue pop up or group roles. And honest to God, I don't know if it's rules as written. Oftentimes when I have group roles, I'll take the average of everybody. So then everybody like feels a little bit of the pressure of like, oops, I was the one who rolled a two, you know. Yep. I find that works really well because it gets the people at the table then interacting with each other again. Honestly, my group knows each other well enough. I don't find it's typically an issue. Like if engagement is an issue, then it's honestly, it's the brick. Hey, go grab another drink, go grab a cookie, whatever. But in game, I found group roles where everybody's having to do the same thing. If you can find a way to bring that in, I've found for me that works really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of do the same as like what you guys do with the like on deck things and stuff like that. I do use a tracker on the top of my GM screen. But what I do is I try to have people off their phones if possible. Like, if you're using D&D Beyond, that's cool. But, like, other than that, yeah. Like, we talk about it at the beginning. Like, yeah, you know, we're all carving time out of our day to be here, myself included. Like, thankfully, most of my players don't really get too disengaged, per se, thankfully. Like, they don't really distract themselves or anything. But I really like handouts and, like, physical objects. So, like, I just made some maps for them. I have potions that they actually roll that have little mini dice in them. My death saving throw is a potion that when you spin and look at the bottom, a dice drops, a d20 drops, and that's your, like, whatever your roll is for your death save. So these things, I, like, actively keep them involved. I also have lights under my table, too. And I don't know if they've caught on to it yet, but I think some of them have, because I keep a, like, Mortal Kombat-style, like, Street Fighter health bar on my big bosses that starts at red and progressively fades down in color gradient to green. So that way I don't have to tell them, like, hey, like, hey, how's it doing? Oh, he's looking pretty hurt. He's wounded. No, that is annoying. I use a lot of lighting effects too. I have a color changing light bulb up on the ceiling too. I like to change the color of the environment. Like, when we do, like, flashbacks or something like that, it normally goes, like, a blue, and it, like, fades around in different blues and things like that. There's a thing coming up that they'll meet very soon, that the whole room will go purple for. So that'll be fun. So I like very practical type things. And I group checks are always a big part too, because there's nothing better than the whole group does well and you got Johnny in the corner that rolls a one and trips on the suit of armor that's in the corner, alerting all the guards. Tabletop Misfits, thank you so much for that. That was amazing.
A good one.
Shout out to James. Right.
Yes.
Thanks, James. You rock.
Also, Jeff, the Mortal Kombat color coding, that I absolutely love that.
Yeah, that's the, like, next level stuff there.
Millennial D&D, and I love it.
Like, look, I played a lot of video games growing up. Like, hell yeah. a lot of my boss fights, honestly, a lot of my, like, quests too are very World of Warcraft inspired. I played the crap out of that game. I still play it, and so it's like there's boss fight mechanics that don't really make sense, but it's like, no, this is what happened at ICC. This is what the Lich King did, so I'm gonna have my guy do it too.
I need you in your next session when you have the player that gets to do the final, you know, how do you do this instead of that? I just need you to go finish him. And they're like, whoa, where did that come from? And you go, you have to listen to the podcast.
Other context.
No other context. Anyways, all right. So now we'll go back up to the top then. Charlie, go ahead and if you've got a question there.
I honestly, there's so many great questions, and I'm so excited to get to all of them. But I have to start with this one from this. I mean, this lady is beautiful who posted this comment. Shout out to this lady named Sarah, who's my wife. says. she says, what do you feel the pros and cons are of theater of the mind versus terrain? As players and GMs, do you have a preference? Pros and cons. I do feel like even with when you do terrain, you still are doing some theater of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there, and until we have, you know, virtual reality setups that are easily editable to capture the imagination of our sessions, I imagine there's always going to be some degree of theater of the mind added to any terrain. But that being said, for me with ADHD, yeah, I love terrain. I love theater of the mind. I think it is great. And have I done it a couple of times where I don't have any setup at the table whatsoever, just us and imagination and dice? Yes. But I gotta say, for my ADHD, it is so helpful to have terrain and to know where did we leave that one NPC or that one person on what part of the grid, and to know like what's the distance between everybody, especially when you're running big encounters. It is so helpful to have terrain. And I do prefer that as a GM and both as a player. And I will say as a GM, and I have any players of mine that are listening have probably encountered at some point a session or one shot where I've just dropped like 50 undead on the table, and you just need terrain for that. Because theater of the mind, it would be more terrifying. It actually, I think, lowers the horror element when you can actually calculate and see, okay, how many are actually around me, rather than all you're thinking is just, you know, Walking Dead swarms and your character is dead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I like to do a little bit of both. I mean, it's always both, right? But I'm a big fan of having at least a map, at least a gridded map. I feel like I have a hard time knowing where everything is and keeping track of it if I don't at least have some kind of grid that I'm working off of. Even if it's just like a dry erase grid that I have some scribble scrabble on, like that's better than nothing to me, just as the DM. As a player, I feel like it's pretty similar for me. Like, I find myself always asking, especially in like combat situations, like, okay, wait, how far away am I from you? And in what direction is that? And, you know, just because the way attacks and stuff work, like the area affects things, and trying not to hurt my friends every turn, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But,
sure.
Kind of adjacent to the terrain thing, I feel like mostly what I'm into when I run games is like props. I really like having props. I really like having like things that the players can actually like pick up. It gets a little crazy. Nothing is to scale. Everything is crazy different scales at my table. But I think it's still fun to have like, you know, okay, if you got a letter from a courier, like actually open the letter and read it. Like that's so cool.
Yeah.
Stuff like that I'm a big fan of.
Yeah. Speaking of millennials, the moment you said that, all that pinged in my head was, we just got a letter. We just got a letter.
Oh my gosh.
Just got a letter.
Yeah, we're definitely aging ourselves right now.
It's from a lich.
That is for your wife, but anyway. It was a great question. Honest to God, I didn't know that was your wife. And I was like, oh, I'm going to read that one because that's a really good question. So that's great. I mean, not to just echo everyone else, definitely the physical visualization of it for me as a DM and as a player on both sides is fantastic, because I cannot, even as a player, I cannot remember where I left my mini. Like, I don't remember where you described how far the monsters were away from me. And as a DM, I would be so lost if I didn't have, again, it could be like a peanut and a thumbtack. Like, you don't have to have the fancy minis and things, you know, but just to have something that you know you can move around, for me, is all the difference in the world. Theater of the mind is great. I find, again, like everyone else has said, it's definitely both, you know. Obviously, being what I do, I love having physical terrain. I think it's beautiful. You know, I think it's fun to be able to interact with. Baldur's Gate 3 has taught me, like, hey, verticality in fights is super important. And that is not something that I think you necessarily always get when you don't have physical terrain, but that also might just be the limitations of my own brain, you know. I'm a big fan of physical terrain, but that's, you know, it's neither here nor there.
I mean at least I know Charlie has access to an ungodly amount of Dwarven Forge.
I am so grateful.
Game Masters. that office is just a joy to be in. Jared, it's in your own name. You are a crafter, so of course, like, that's going to be like, so I think everybody loves good terrain. I'm going to kind of go, I love terrain. I do, but this, I'm going to use this last session as an example of why Theater of the Mind is also super important, because I only really bring out terrain in my big fights. I try to, like, I have a dry, the way that my table is, it's a, I built the table that, so there's a 2x2 dropout in the middle of it that I can reveal, like I can just take a little topper off of it. And there's a gridded map under there all the time. So if we need a gridded map, we can just pull one out real quick. But the players went out and they went and they had to stop this snapping turtle from wrecking a bunch of like fish crates and stuff, right? If I had terrain for that, my players would have gone into tactical mode and they would have gone like, okay, I want to get the flank here and here. I want to make sure that I'm here to do this and here to do that, right? Instead, we use theater of the mind to describe, all right, it's early morning. No one is in there yet. It's quiet waters. So then I've got a player that's like, oh, kind of Batman themed. He's like, okay, are there trees around? I was like, yeah, you're in the woods. It's kind of like a pond. So he's like, all right, I'm going to go up into the tree and I'm going to like perch myself up. So they then took this as they're like, okay, we don't see the turtle. And so they went and they described how they were using different spells that they normally wouldn't, like this like force telekinetic thing, I forget what it's called, that actually the turtle saved the throw, but it would have pushed him up out of the water. And so it allowed for this whole like, okay, I had the players describe how they were doing this turtle being pushed out from the sand. And then one of my other players was like, all right, well, the second he comes out of the water, he thunderclapped basically, but he described it as a punch pretty much. And it was like, okay, well, you guys would have never had this idea to be two of you pretty much shoulder to shoulder. And then have this other, like they were described how he like jumped down out of the trees to, and then there was this whole like death coil thing that like alligators do that I had the turtle do as well. So it just played for this whole really fun impromptu combat that would never have been able to play out with tactile terrain. It's just, some things are just better described and everyone laughing because, you know, it made no sense. And we flubbed things up. We're like, no, like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. How do you, and you just go back and redact it. But
yep.
Don't be afraid of theater of the mind is what I'm saying.
I agree.
It honestly can stretch you as a GM as well too. It forces you to have to get creative with your descriptions and the way that you see things, you have to verbally express. And that definitely helps you become a better GM too. So yeah. Hashtag thank you for coming.
Sure, yeah. the cons definitely is, you know, either as a DM or some of the players, the terrain can definitely feel very literal. And yeah. I always try to communicate with my players of like, we literally do have these pieces of terrain in front of us, but like, mm-hmm. we can still, you know, still poke around, still ask, might not be exactly, you know. So I do think that is something of like, again, it's ideally both. Even with the physical terrain you see in front of you, we're still doing theater of the mind, maybe even with the terrain itself. You know, hey, maybe that cliff is 50 feet higher than what the terrain indicates. Let's talk about it, you know.
Nicole, go ahead and grab us another question if you would.
All right. I like this one from Body Mind PB Soul, which is a friend of mine, Tony. She's got a featured character in my book, which is awesome.
Nice.
So she asks, for each session, how much prep do you do and how much do you wing it? Ooh. Which I feel like for all of us, it's probably some kind of combination, but I don't know. I think I end up doing like, depends on how much time I have. I really like to prep. I enjoy doing that part a lot. So if I have the time, I'll prep a lot. But then what actually ends up being used in session, it's like maybe like 60 to 70% prep and then like 30 to 40% stuff we just make up as we go along based on like how the other players are making choices and what they're wanting mm-hmm. to do in the scenario I created.
I think you said it well, Nicole. I think that's true of me. I actually love doing the prep. Again, you said it, if there's time, I love doing the prep because I love diving into the world and like building it out and seeing, you know, because sometimes this sounds weird, but sometimes like my expectations are kind of like pushed aside even when I'm just doing prep of like, I have a vision in my mind going in. And then as I'm prepping, I'm like, oh no, that's actually how this, you know, society would do this. So I love prep, but I think that's correct. I think it's important to thread the needle between you can prep as much as you want, but you still need to be very flexible and not be like, hey, I prepped this, so we're doing this, you know?
Yes.
And I think that's very important. Yeah, exactly. It is. It's collaborative storytelling. So, I mean, I love prepping for a session, but I think having the talent to be able to wing it, I think being familiar enough with the world that you're playing in, with the players you're playing with, is important to be able to, you know, still be able to hang your hat on it and say, yeah, that was fun. I'm still proud of what happened, but you know, we were winging it and it was great.
Okay, sorry about that, guys.
Just like that. We said your name three times and you literally appeared.
Yes.
Nice. I'll say it was really funny editing the video that I wasn't there for the first half. Because I too felt like a listener when I was like, what are you talking about?
That's awesome.
Anyways, sorry about that.
No, all good. No apologies needed.
All right.
How much do you prep? How much do you wing it? Is right, what we're
saying. Someone drive the boat. I'm on a dinghy. prep.
Yeah, I said mine. James said his.
Okay. Charlie, did you go?
No way. No, I'm going to go after you.
How much do I prep? Okay. A few hours at least. No, that's not in like one sitting for me. Normally, it's like throughout the day, I'll like have different thoughts and I use OneNote for all my prep. So I can like edit stuff on my phone real quick if I have like an idea for things.
Nice.
And I don't really recommend anyone use OneNote because it's like, it's kind of organized, but at the same time, it's really not. And my brain is just like, I don't know, beatboxing blob cats the whole time. So for some reason, I can keep up with it and make sense of it. But then what I'll do normally the day of the game is I won't create anything new for the campaign. I'll just reread like the last session notes, the last session campaign, outline that I did. And then like, the way that I run my campaign, it's kind of like a linear, kind of like a sitcom style where there's like a beginning and an end, but it goes like that, like an arc, but how you get there is up to you guys, but I always have like multiple outcomes that are multiple different places or events that can happen pretty much anywhere. So that takes a lot of the prep off, and just being fluid with where things happen. Like I have a few things that are like pre-planned, but they're not very, like I don't plan a whole lot. And I like the improving part because that's when like the most ridiculous things happen. So yeah.
Some of the ridiculous things that have happened at my D&D tables, I'm glad have been spontaneous, because looking back, mm-hmm. It's like, man, if I had planned that, I probably need to be, you know, observed clinically.
Yeah. And also it's way cooler when like the party comes up with something and you're like, that's idiotic. I love it.
Let's do it.
Let's do that. Let's hold up the store owner. Yeah, this is going to go well.
And what can go wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Prepping is good, though. I don't believe the lie that people say that they don't prep at all and they run great games. I don't believe you. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't. But
kudos to you though, if you can, because that's very impressive. Can do it, but
I've been in games that have very little prep, and it is very clear. Yeah. Charlie.
Okay. If I haven't prepped at all, we have like two options. We can go shopping, or we can go on a very generic dungeon crawl. Yes. That's the two things I can do with no prep, and that's it.
Yes. Cue the montage.
Yeah.
Charlie, go ahead and round us out on this question.
Yeah. So I want to shout out also Not So Miniatures. Awesome guy, awesome stuff he's doing over there. His question ties a lot into this one as well, of like, how do you walk the line between under prepping and over prepping for a session, with body, mind, and soul for each session? How much prep do you do and how much do you wing it? For me, what I found is, especially for my paid games, I really try to lean into the collaborative storytelling element and just have things at the ready if the players engage with it, but really just letting them guide, you know, the direction, the pace, what's, you know, what they get into, and just react accordingly with the world around them. So for that, it takes a lot of prep before the session off my shoulders quite a bit, but it does mean that if I don't spend a good amount of time, you know, fleshing out certain things in a town or an area or where they might be coming up to, I will have to do a lot of prep for that, because, you know, it's a whole town of possibilities that if they're going to, and I don't have that well prepared, I'm going to have to spend a lot of hours and a lot of time doing that. So pros and cons, you know, I don't have to cram right before a session if I'm running late with stuff. But then at the same time, if that does happen to compound with the session and they're going to be coming up to a place, I'm pulling an all-nighter. That being said, for my paid games also, I do a lot of prep when it comes to a one-shot. When it's a one-shot and people have paid, you know, a good amount of money for everybody to come out and be there, I really try to respect that and make the most, because I feel with a one-shot, there's a lot more, I don't want to say burden, but responsibility on the GM to set the tone and the pace, because these people have not spent session after session after session coming up with their group's chemistry and how they work and work through problems and make decisions together and things like that. And they don't have as much character backlog and content to bounce off and build upon and explore with each other. So they're really coming at the table to sit and be like, all right, GM, tell us what happens. Entertain us. Do the dance. And the other thing I will say, as far as like winging it, like Jared was saying, I mean, the more you know your space and what's going on, I think reacting and winging it based on your players, say, you know, following the classic yes and mindset is so important, rather than saying, "Ooh, actually, no, I don't think that would fit in this scenario or this setting. I don't think that your character would do that." It just tanks the story and the vibe and the energy at the table. It is so much better just to roll with it. And if it's silly, great. If it's serious, awesome. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, just wing it with your players. I mean, at the end of the day, they also don't know, right, what you don't know.
Yeah.
So make it till you make it is also my other thing when it comes to winging it as a GM, and just play it off cool. And then, you know, when you have your sit down session, you know, whether you do that every couple of times or at the very end of the campaign, you can be like, guys, at that one session 16, and you guys asked me about Marco, I had nothing. That was all just I just completely I don't know where that came from. And they're gonna be like, that totally seemed planned and authentic and everything else. And you're like,
I'm just the trick that is,
like, then you have to remember what you actually said about that.
Yes.
If you didn't prep it and you just make it up in the moment, make sure you remember what you made up.
Yes.
Right. There's been so many times where I've done that, and not like I'm trying to jot things down frantically on a notepad, and then the like next day I'll go back and I'm like, all right, I know I took notes, I need to, you know, better, you know, properly put these, and I'll look at it, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I was trying to say here.
Or don't do this often, GMs, but if you're really in a pinch, just go, tell you what, I'll give inspiration for anybody who can tell me the name of that NPC. Free inspiration right now. And just give them a 5-minute break to look through their notes and brainstorm. And then if they all collectively go, I think it was Marco. And you're like, that's right.
That's right.
That is correct. Moving on to our next question. I think it's me. We're going to do Death Rolls Dice. It's a 3-part question so that we can answer a couple of these really quickly. Part one, are y'all doing a one-shot sometime? Short answer is we fully intend to, yes. We intend to do multiple. As you've heard, if you're listening to this, we're all very busy. Yeah. Right. Which is why I say, yes, we plan to. Part two of that, are y'all crafting a story together for a campaign sometime? I think this would be super fun. We've like toyed with the idea, and maybe I don't want to answer for everybody. At some point in the future, nothing's impossible. If schedules are conducive to it, I think we would all love to be able to do that. Anyone else? There's a third part to this question.
Everybody join for our Patreon and pay us to do this, and yes, we will get a campaign.
Yeah, and I was gonna say the time that it would take for us to come up with a full campaign would be pretty, that'd be a lot, because I think we would want to get something that's really incredible. And like, I'm down to just like multiverse all three of our worlds and just
that would be
morph them all together.
Probably the more realistic path is we intend to do one shots, and maybe one day they'll all coalesce and it'll blow everybody's mind. It would be like, whoa, those were connected the whole time. I thought they were a frog in that story. You know?
Yeah, well, I'm even having a hard time coming up with like my origin of like I have the post in a draft, but I'm like, I don't have enough yet for it. Like, it's so, I mean, coming up with a campaign for this would be I get nervous even thinking about it. Like,
we've also floated the idea of doing like a kind of Twilight Zone, you know, where like we each run a session and it's just its own like kind of encapsulated one shot. You guys let us know in the comments what sounds more interesting to you guys, and if there's enough support and interest, and we can try to make it work. But you guys let us know.
Yeah, I think again, I don't want to speak for everybody. I think we're all willing to play D&D if time permits. You know, so, third part again, easy answer. Part three is: are y'all having guests on sometime? And the answer again to that is yes. We intend to. In fact, next episode we intend to have our first guests on the on the show, and maybe we won't announce who yet, just in case you know schedules don't jive, but. Yes, it is our goal to have guests on semi-frequently and you know, build out our little crafters of stories.
Yes. there's a couple other things coming up that I feel comfortable saying, at least, is that there are some other little things coming with the podcast that'll maybe keep your ear holes entertained, not on a every 3 weeks basis. So keep your ears out for that. So yeah.
We're 10 episodes in, so we're gonna start throwing in extra fun stuff now that we've got our bearings.
Yes.
Also, just while we're still on it, shout out, little plug for Death Rolls Dice has been helping me a lot with my book and doing some of the graphic design pieces that I'm not good enough at art to do myself. And he's gonna be joining me for the one shot with Tabletop Misfits, the Ethereum one shot. So
awesome.
You can also catch Death Rolls Dice on May 24th as well.
Yes.
That's super cool.
All right, Jess. I think that brings us back to you.
All right, let's see. Let's go. Ooh. I want to do one, but it triggers me.
I'm excited.
I'm like looking through the comments. Which one?
I know. I'm like, all right. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to do it anyways. Okay. How do you handle a player at the table who just wants to win D&D?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
question brought to you by Heroes of Evermore. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry. See, that's how much I'm already freaking triggered by this. Sorry. Heroes of Evermore, thank you for triggering my PTSD. Okay. I have been at tables where we had somebody like watching once, and the GM was like, yeah, it's you. He was explaining it to somebody. He's like, it's you versus me. And I was like, I don't like that. That's not good.
Yeah.
But how do I handle, this is all a segue into how do I handle this? And I am, at first I was really nice about it. I was like, book, like it's an RPG, like you're telling a collective story. Now though, I'm not so nice about it. And if like I had noticed that a player is like intentionally min-maxing for the sake of trying to win or just be like the best character they possibly can be, I just straight tell them go play Baldur's Gate. Like, I'm like, look, like this isn't Baldur's Gate. Go play Baldur's Gate. If you want to be the superstar, go play a video game. That you have no place being here right now, because you're one, you're impacting my storytelling from like to help, not my storytelling, but like my ability to help story tell what you guys are doing, because I have to curate everything around you. Because you're the problem. So now you're fixing your, you know, you're the one that's manipulating everything else around you. So I'm pretty strict on your role is your role. Unless it's like a cocked role, you don't get to redo your roles. Session zero, your stats are your stats. Like there's no changing them, like no rerolls. Because it destroys the RPG element of it. You know, like everyone can play. If you want to play dice battles, go play Warhammer. You know, like I play Warhammer all the time. It's a great outlet for wanting to just smash people on the tabletop. But for a storytelling game, you want to have characters that have flaws, that have things that they're not good at. That's enough of, I'm going to just ramble on and on and on about this one. So someone else take it now. Clearly my stance on it is please don't do it at my table.
I mean, which I think is valid. And I think there's a point that if that is somebody's only goal, then I do think it's important to, if the conversation wasn't already had. I mean, the true answer is hopefully you had a session zero and laid expectations and hopefully everybody understands what the goal is.
They do know.
But I think the reality, what you just said, Jeff, like, hey, maybe D&D is just not for this person. You know, if they're really trying to win at D&D, then, hey, maybe you can, as the Dungeon Master, maybe you can accommodate that. Maybe you can give them their moment of like, hey, I'm going to lob a softball to you, you know, and maybe don't make them realize it, but maybe give them their moment, because that would be a big deal. Like, we all want to be the hero of our story, you know. But I think that probably is the reality is like, hey, maybe this just isn't the tabletop game for you, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nope. I mean, or this other answer is, you know, add 10 to the AC of the monster they're fighting and double its health and make it hit harder, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's always ways to get around it. But I go back to the whole, like, they were the reason why fights were different and stuff like that. It's like, at what point, like, yes, you can adjust everything, but at what point does that become so groundbreaking for everybody else involved it becomes noticeable?
And that is important. And that is kind of the question. Hey, is everybody
doing?
Yeah. Hey, is everybody having
fun? Got me on a tangent. Sorry.
You're good.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
I think that's an important thing, though. It's like, hey, is this spoiling the fun for other people? If yes, then hey, let's head this off and have a conversation about it with the individual or as the table. Or, you know, hey, if everybody's kind of enjoying it, then like maybe as the DM, maybe it's not your moment, you know, which stinks because, you know, we all know how much love and time and passion we put into these things. But like, the goal is for everyone to have fun. So sometimes that might mean, hey, we're going to let these guys play hero, you know, for a session, for three sessions, you know, whatever. And, you know, maybe there is some amount of accommodation to that if it's not spoiling fun for others, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I have that conversation at my tables a lot that, like, are we all having fun still? Like, mm-hmm. is this good, or is this, like, becoming not fun for some of us? And I feel like I definitely have let some people who really just seem like they need the spotlight and their hero moment, I have let them have it for a time, but then I will pretty quickly transition to, like, okay, the next, like, seven things that y'all have to do, you can only do as a team. Like, it can't be person hero thing.
Yeah. The thing I always tell people is, whenever I'm asked, like, how do you know you're a good GM, or how do you know it's a good game? And I say it's very simple. The marker is, did everyone at the table have fun?
Right.
And if that's the case,
Great.
You did great. Everyone did great. Everyone won. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. So
That's exactly it.
If the idea of, like, winning the session is what you want to do, then by all means, I encourage you, find the GM, find the table that wants to do that. Mm-hmm. And if it is, like you said, like, min-maxing, find stuff like that. I mean, I know I have one-shots where you can fight, you know, Tiamat or a mutated Tarrasque. That's perfect for mid-maxers.
One-shots are different.
Yeah. If you, you know, like you said, looking for that spotlight kind of thing, maybe look for a campaign with a GM that's, you know, a smaller group. Or perhaps get a GM and who wants to just run a solo one where it's just you and the GM. That's a ton of fun. That's, you know, speaking of Theater of the Mind, you know, that's one of my favorite times with Theater of the Mind is with smaller groups or one-on-one, you know, with one player doing a small campaign or something. Go ahead and do that. If that's what you want to do, absolutely. But the biggest marker is you're winning if everyone's having fun. And if everyone's having fun, great. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter how the session goes or who wins, who loses, as long as everyone has a good time, then you won. But if winning for you looks like min-maxing or looks like spotlight or something else, just go find a table in the GM that wants to do that.
That's a good answer.
Next one we open with a fantastic podcast, great group of people. And so, of course, they're going to give a great question. How much information do you let your players make canon on the fly as they discuss their backstories? Are there any ground rules you use to allow them that freedom within reason? I tell my players, for me personally, even with my homebrew setting, my inspiration for the homebrew setting was I didn't want to put limits on the players. I didn't want them to have limits on their backstories, their creativity when it comes to creating these characters. That being said, there are, of course, topics that are, you know, not suitable for the table, certain tropes, you know, that we may steer away from, anything that would create some kind of tension between players. Of course, I'm going to nip that right in the butt. Not going to let that, you know, grow at the table. I let them just kind of roll with it. And like I said, do the yes and. I've always find that to be so much better. And even with the players that I've had sit at my table that at session zero go, I'm going to break your game. I'm going to break your setting. And I just go for it. And I've called the bluff every single time, and it's never done anything but just create really cool moments. So I really try not to limit it other than just what is, again, ensuring that everyone has fun at the table.
Yeah.
Sure.
I feel like I let just almost anything fly. I mean, I've never had a problem with, like, you know, uncomfortable or inappropriate themes coming up at my tables. I think just because the nature of the games that I do are pretty wholesome and young in general. But I don't know. I like the creativity. I embrace it. I'm like, you know what? If you come up with something cool and it can fit within this world in some kind of reasonable-ish way, like, let's run with it.
Mm-hmm. I think that agreed. I think that's the right poise. I think that's always the right choice. I think it's important, again, in a session zero, I can't, like, overstate, I think, how important that is to set clear expectations. You know, very clearly, you know, outline what is not appropriate, what will not be happening in this world, in this setting, in this collaborative storytelling. But that again is what it should be. Players should have choice in that, you know. Again, that is another way to help encourage your players to have a backstory, even if it's vague, and work with them on it of like, all right, we're going to find ways to plug this into the world. Some of them you're going to know right off the bat. Some of them we're going to discover together along the way as things seamlessly, you know. I've had a couple players that mid-session will begin to like share their backstory and share it differently than what was actually written down. It's like, that's cool. Like, let's make the adjustment. Or I'll, you know, talk to them after. I'm just like, hey, not trying to call you out on anything. What you said was different than what we had. I go, is that what you want to go with, or do we want to correct that? And they're like, I think this is cool. I'm like, cool. Let's.
Great, do it.
And I think that's incredibly important because, again, as we've said multiple times, it's collaborative storytelling, you know?
Yeah.
I think ideally your players have a good pulse on the world setting too, and what they are attempting to make canon or are making canon is not going to be wildly different from what the goal is anyway, you know?
Right, yeah. 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 I mean, I'll even take it a little step further. I agree with everybody so far. But what I actually do when we're making our new characters is I give everybody my incarnate login, and I say, hey, pick an area on the map and create it. This is like if you don't want to be from a place that's already established, I say, hey, go ahead and create the area on the map. And that has led to some of the coolest cities in my world is I didn't even come up with them. And it's because the players have come up with these incredible places with full of backstory and lore and like, oh, well, I've got my players now like thinking about their characters so much, they're tying it to other campaigns that have happened. Like, so it's like, okay, see, this is the really cool part. So I thoroughly encourage GMs to have their players create the canon of the backstory and the storytelling in the world lore. I'll echo Jared too. Like if somebody says something different, I'll text them later. Like, hey, same thing. Do you like that better? If they say yes, cool. We're running with it because ultimately who the heck knows except for them.
Yep.
So it doesn't really matter. And all of my players are really good about like talking to me about their backstory. Because they want to try to have things. I like to weave things into the stories if I can.
If you can open clear lines of communication between you as the DM and your players, like always, that is the ideal because it always leads to then better conversation and open sharing and like you know, just best.
And it's led to some really fun little things too, where it's like, oh, like they've talked about like getting materials for stuff. It's like, I don't think that's here. And it's like, oh, well, it's back in my hometown, you know? And it's like, oh, cool. Okay. So now you're kind of actually feeling this pull to like, maybe we go and do a side session where, you know, something goes into an area that the player created, you know? I don't know.
So fun.
I like it.
That was the episode. I don't know what the heck I'm doing for this right now.
We rolled the D100 and it said that we were having guests on next time. So
we rolled and it just said guest. So you'll have to be on the lookout for that because episode 11 will feature our first guest. So thank you in advance. Thank you. And also thank you for listening. You, the supporters, we love you very much. Thank you. And we will catch you the next time on the Storycrafters.
We did it.
We did it.